He has the fattest feet I have ever seen. I mean, again, they must be size 25 quadruple wide.
You don't know Nate Davis from a jar of Vicks.
Oh, it is that time of the week. Time to welcome in our good friend Jared Stillman to the program. Joins us every Friday morning at 7 o'clock. Stilly, good morning. How are we doing?
I am super. How are you guys?
We are super as well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Who watched Tua last night?
I was gonna start there. I mean, so far through the NFL season, we have Tua stinking up the joint in a primetime game, which I guess we should have known heading into last night.
300 and a win on a noon CBS kickoff that nobody watched.
You know, yes. Time of day.
Jacksonville. You know, he is the champion of the Spiro Ditas Adam Archuleta game. Like, the way that Adam Archuleta feels about Tua and the way that, say, like Tony Romo probably feels about it, it's probably night and day. Because the second Tua plays in a primetime game, I think the number was something like 2-8 over the last 2 years. We'll make it 2-9. Now, in all seriousness, that concussion that he suffered at the end of the game is rather concerning just from a hope he's okay standpoint. But he stinks. And I keep telling people are like, but Jared, look at the stats. I'm like, I don't care. Whenever he plays against a good team with a good quarterback, he stinks. And last night he stunk.
I was trying to give you even more flowers because I was
going
to Tua.
You're going to give me the Sammy D?
I was giving you Sammy D.
Yeah! It's
good. The quarterback whisperer for 1 week.
I put it up on Twitter. I haven't looked at it because I fell right to sleep after I did it. But I put up a poll that was Tua or Sammy D on Twitter last night. I actually wonder how it's doing. Let's see. Sam Darnold right now, 67% of the vote.
Oh, my God.
That's exciting. Yeah, we don't need to get into a two argument. I was at my kid's high school game. I did see, you know, terrible pick and also the concussion. But I will ask you, Jared, is the season opener against Trevor Lawrence and the Jags, is that not a big game just because it's played at noon? No big games happen during the daytime? Is that the suggestion here? Because I think that was a pretty big game against a pretty good quarterback. I mean, he's another guy who got paid like Tua, and he threw for 368 and won the game.
You think a non-divisional game,
the season opener against Jacksonville? Yeah,
CBS,
I think that's a big game.
Is a big, quote-unquote, big game.
Yes,
did you watch
it, Jared?
Did you watch it?
I flipped around. I used my Sunday ticket very well, so I did watch some of it. Yeah, he was excellent in that
game. That's code for no. Robbie, did you watch
it? No, that's not true.
I did not watch it, no.
Of course you didn't watch it. Nobody watched it. That's what makes
nobody
Tua great
it.
In those
yes.
games. The second go. Everybody
daytime
watched.
Daytime games can never be good per Jared.
The noon kickoff
great
window.
Put that in the tape vault.
Every now and then there's a noon kickoff because, like, the 3:30 Cowboy game is locked in stone because they're the Cowboys and Sunday night football, whatever. It's a game that we wish they would flex out of noon. Maybe once a season. There's a noon game that's like, oh, my God, that's a great
Once
game at noon
season,
on CBS.
There's a good
and
game
And it ain't
at
never
noon.
Tua's game.
Once a and season.
Again, we're talking about the Titan announcers. I remember when I was a kid, and it felt like the Titans got Solomon Wilcots and Ian Eagle every single week. Now, Ian has made his way up.
Yes.
Solomon, and I actually really like Solomon a lot, but Solomon has made his way out. But we used to call him the F crew. And that's Tua thrives in the F crew games.
So, Jared, on the Levis front, one of my concerns with him.
He does not thrive on the F crew games.
Well, not the other day. One of my concerns on his front is, like, is he too high strung? Does he have the poise that is required at times to play that position at a high level? And I know, you know, we've talked about Levis all week, but do you think that's something that can even be coached out of you at some point? Like, how do you view the poise part of this and how high strung he seems to be on the field and how that affects his actual play that we see on Sundays?
Well, you said, can it be coached out of you? And I mean, to me, it's not about whether or not it could be coached out of me. It's whether or not it could be coached out of him. And right now they can't even coach him to slide. So if we're going to talk about, like, what he can be coached on or what he can't be coached on, I mean, right now it's not a good sign. Here's what I will say about Levis, and I go back to last year, and this is why I'm so disappointed about this year, because, I mean, I don't think that the big jump comes between game 17 and 18. I think the big jump comes between year one and year two, the big mental jump of knowing what the game is about and knowing what it takes. But I go back to last year against Pittsburgh. He looked great, you know, in the first half, and he was really in a rhythm. And then when Pittsburgh got the lead, then all of a sudden he started throwing stupid passes. You know, he misses Kyle Phillips, although TD said he was coached to throw it to Burks on that fade pass. But then he throws the ball to DeAndre, and DeAndre has to make a great play to break up what would have been an interception. He then throws the ball into the end zone. The Steeler DB drops it. Then he throws the next ball into the end zone and gets intercepted. The next week at Tampa Bay, he started to do the same thing in the fourth quarter, and Tim Kelly immediately took the ball out of his hands, recognizing what he was doing, and started calling bubble screens for Kyle Phillips, because you could tell Tim Kelly was like, I'm not this guy. I can't not put the ball in his hands, even though we're down by two scores, because he's going to throw the ball right to the other team. Well, he did the same thing, different coaching staff, year two, and I think he kind of did the same thing, you know, against Chicago, which was when the game got serious, your point about being high strung, he felt like, I got to go do something, and it just takes over. And then it's like he comes to the sideline, and the coach says he explains everything perfectly, which makes me think he's kind of like the water boy, you know, when the play happens and the water boy, like, in, you know, just visualizes, you know, saying the water boy goes crazy. I think that might be what Levis happens. Levis is up there at the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden somebody's head turns and they say, you know, and he takes the ball and, you know, just goes crazy. Unfortunately, it's probably good to go crazy on defense, maybe not good to go crazy at quarterback.
Wait, what'd you just say? What word did you just say?
You can, yeah, you can't say that on the radio, can you?
What the hell is happening to our program? Good God. We have to, like, erase this whole segment now. I'm like, am I hearing this correctly? You just had a total Levis meltdown. You know, all you had to do was, like, take the sack, and you just decided to go miracle
yeah,
flip. Holy cow. I don't even know where to go from there. Robbie, you asked him a question. I don't even know what to say right now.
Well, let's go Skoroski then, because you've talked – we joke about the feet. I am heavily concerned with him. The pass blocking the other day was so bad. It was so bad. And, you know, if you wanted to last year – we've talked about this week. You could make every excuse for him last year that you wanted to, with Andre Dillard being to his left, Aaron Brewer to be into his right. He had the appendectomy. He put on the weight in the offseason. And for him to get beat as badly as he did on Sunday, especially concerning. And, Jared, I'll be honest with you. The idea of him trying to block Quinnen Williams on Sunday scares the crap out of me if I'm a Titans fan or Will Levis.
Yeah, I think with Skoronski, and this, I'm actually being serious here for a second. I think that with Skoronski, one of the issues might be the fact that he never actually played guard in college. And I'm not saying that, like, he needs to learn how to play guard, but that the teams never got to see what that would look like. And so there was just an assumption, because he was a good tackle in college, that he would be a good guard in the pros. And I think maybe he does, like, that transition wasn't as seamless as everybody thought it would be. And I'm not sure, like, physically, I'm not sure that he can play that position. And because I don't think he can move his feet, and all you got to do is get him turned, and then you can go right by him. And teams know that. And there's no way for an offensive lineman, like, with certain positions, you can hide certain things. You can't really hide an offensive lineman who can't pass block. Because at some point in a game, like, you're going to have to go five guys out of the pattern. You're going to have to, all of those things, you're going to have to do at some point. Like, and he's going to have to bow up and block Quinnen Williams. And it's just a reality. And then if it's not Quinnen Williams this week, it'll be Robbie, who's that big fat guy for the Packers that's really good?
Kenny Clark.
It'll be him. And so it's like it will be a consistent thing, because everybody's got good players in the NFL. And I'm really, really concerned that Peter physically cannot play the position at the level that is required to play it, period, much less at the level that is required to play it when you're picked 11th overall.
What is your obsession with body parts?
Well, I mean, it matters in football. Like, when we're talking about whether or not somebody can play a position, the way their feet move does matter. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, no, the way the feet move, yes. The actual...
I'll never forget.
Girth of the feet? I have never heard that discussed before. You brought that to the football discussion, I must say.
Well, I mean,
the fatness of the feet.
So we used to do the Floyd Reese Draft Academy back in the day, and it was a very popular segment where I would just hush and let Floyd talk for 30 minutes about whatever topic it was we went over on drafting. You know, it's kind of like a how-to about being a GM and drafting or whatever. And he was talking at one point about defensive linemen and evaluating their body types. And he was talking about, like, the difference between a defensive lineman who has a butt like Jarrell Casey or a defensive lineman who has a butt like Daquan Jones. And I, you know, I was giggling through that or whatever, but I mean, it's like it's serious stuff now. And then he was talking about corners and the corners that are duck footed versus the corners that aren't. And I was like, what's duck footed? And he looks right down at me and goes, like you. And my feet, like, are just naturally kind of pointed outward. He's like, that's duck footed. He said a duck footed corner can't get back as fast as a corner whose feet go right in front of him. I was like, huh. So that stuff does matter. And I think with Skoronski, I mean, look, the fat feet thing's kind of more of a joke than it is anything else because of training camp. He's got massive feet, which, again, people that big usually do have big feet.
Have you compared like, his feet to Devondre Sweat's feet? Like, I haven't. Have you?
Like Shaquille O'Neal. But anywho, my whole point with Skoronski and his feet is he doesn't move them very quickly, and that's a problem. They're stuck in cement.
Well, it's gonna
I don't think it's dangerous, as Kaharski said, to say that Skoronski has thick feet.
He did say
is that.
Dangerous.
What he said? I think he said it's dangerous to condemn him as a bust at this point in his career, right? Wasn't that what he was saying?
I don't think that's dangerous.
I don't think it's dangerous either. I mean, we're talking about freaking sports and body parts and, you know, testing the limits of, you know, what's able to be said publicly. I mean, it's not like life or death.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to Stilly. Jared, thanks for being with us. We'll be listening at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, boys, thanks a bunch. Breach.
Boys talked in.
What'd he say?
I have no idea. Hopefully not a bad word. God, Jared.
We'll have more on Robbie and Rex Road coming up next. 1025-1063 The Game. Tune in to 1025-1063 The Game tomorrow at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week. Alabama taking on Wisconsin, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. I'll be there for that one, watching Alabama and Wisconsin. We'll see how Jalen Milroe and company handle going on the road. Nice Big Ten test for them coming up tomorrow against a Wisconsin team that, quite frankly, has not looked very good so far.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It should be an amazing atmosphere up there. That's one of the great places in this country for tailgating, and I think, you know, great atmosphere. I mean, I think that's one of the best atmospheres in college football when it gets going. Early game, you know, that's one of those places where the later the day gets, the route, and it's not like, I guess it's not like all that different from a lot of places, but it gets rowdier later. But hopefully, you know, they'll be ready to rock. I don't know, man. Bama was vulnerable against South Florida, was really in a battle until the very end with a deceiving final score. So I'm not ruling out the Badgers from making that a game.
Should I participate in the jump around tradition that they have there, or should I just watch?
No, hold on to your butt. I've been there a few times in the press box. When they do that, it is absolutely terrifying. That freaking press box sways back and forth. I'm sitting there with a half a brat crammed in my mouth, and I'm like, whoa. I mean, it's, you know, that's not my safe word. Oh, you know, it's like, it's actually terrifying. It really is.
Well, that's good. Hopefully the stadium remains intact while I'm there tomorrow.
It's probably fine in the stadium, but, you know, like the press box is sort of, it's almost like it's a little, you know, it's like elevated or
suspended.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Thank you. So maybe that's like it's way worse, way scarier there than just in the actual stadium. I'm sure that's true. So, yeah, go ahead. Jump around, man.
Going to be really interested to
see. Hello, fellow kids.
Hello, children. Going to be interesting to see how Quinnen Williams, I would assume he's going to be lined up against Peter Skoronski a fair amount in this game. Interested to see what that matchup looks like. Can Skoronski hold his own? Is it going to be another disaster in terms of the pass blocking? We went through some of the numbers yesterday. I think he allowed 8 pressures in that game, according to the Next Gen Stats. And it was like 3 or 4 quick pressures, which is not good. Not obviously what you want to see. And it doesn't get any easier, Joe, with Quinnen Williams coming in, who, as I pointed out on Twitter yesterday, responsible for the single greatest sporting interview of all time in the draft here in Nashville when he sneezed, blessed, and thanked himself all at one time. One of the greatest things ever.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. And he, that is one of the all-time greats. Now, he's a heck of a player. I mean, that, and it is, I mean, really, it's one of the best interior guys that they'll see this year. He's a really good player. So, no, it's, and this is where, like, you know, a Skoronski, you could absolutely do a low light cut up, and maybe someone has out there of some pass protection stuff from last week that's like, whoa, man. You could also do, you know, it's like your guy Malik Willis when he came out of Liberty. There were highlight and low light stuff on him that were both like stunning, you know. You know, Skoronski run blocking. He had some great reps last week. You know, I mean, when he can square someone up, I mean, that's where he's very powerful. I mean, that's where the more the Titans can have any kind of success doing that, the more they have a chance to slow down that pass rush some. But when it comes down to it, I feel like, you know, he's going to probably have to have a lot of help with Quinnen Williams. I mean, Quinnen Williams is he's an auto double guy anyway, right? And that's the thing. You know, the Titans have, I think, two auto double guys inside, which is where, you know, that's the superpower potentially of that defense. But yeah, he is an auto double guy, of course. But still, like, he can rip through those and make plays.
Deagle in the YouTube chat, is JC an elite athlete, or are both him and Skoronski on the slower side? I wonder if Skoronski and JC would do better on opposite sides. This is from Deagle. What do you make of that?
Wait, I'm sorry. Like, flip-flop them? Is that what
you're
saying?
Someone said put them on the other side. Yeah.
JC Latham is he's a outstanding athlete. No, I mean, again, like, we're talking relative to the position.
Right.
I mean, Skoronski, yeah, look, I can't disagree with Jared again. Like, we make fun of the fat feet thing. I mean, it is funny. I've just never heard that said. But I don't disagree with slow-footed. He looks slow-footed at times in pass pro. And just, but I think the question is, again, is it because he's incapable physically and he just is not nearly, I mean, this guy was an elite tackle in the Big Ten going against NFL pass rushers at Northwestern. So I don't really buy the whole moving to guard thing. I mean, to me, that takes away some of the stuff that he's bad at, right? But is he incapable, or is this a technique thing where he just completely lost his head last week and didn't play with the technique that Bill Callahan has been trying to instill? Titans fans better hope that's the second, that it's answer B, and that, you know, that he can find that. Because if it's just that he's incapable, well, it's going to be a tough season, and it's going to be a tough road for him.
Well, quite frankly, like, when Bill Callahan was hired, everybody was going to focus in on the tackle positions, and I get why. But one of the first thoughts I have was, man, that's great for Skoronski, because you've got a demonstrated track record here of this guy being one of, if not the best offensive line coaches in football. And whatever potential is there for Skoronski, you would think Callahan would be the guy that fully brings it out of him. Again, it's one game. I'm not totally giving up on the guy, but not a very encouraging start for Skoronski under Bill Callahan.
Yeah, it's a big week. Like I said, Sunday to me is, Levis has to play well, but everybody knows, you know, the quarterback's the quarterback. I'm looking at that left side, in particular him on Sunday, you know, over and over again, because it is a critical week for him to show that week one was an aberration and he got away from some things, and it's still in there for him. And it's a huge part of, we've talked all preseason about, man, that right side, are they going to figure that out? Can they be okay? Because the left side is probably going to be pretty good, right? That left side, left tackle to center, man, there's a lot of potential there. And then the second half last week happened.
Yep, no doubt about it. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, a discussion on the Levis front that I truly wonder, do people actually care about? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership. Well, the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up at 7:45. TD will be with us at 8 to break down the Titans matchup against the Jets. Looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we talked to Charles Robinson yesterday and brought up the Michael Lombardi comments on the GM Shuffle podcast, essentially saying that going back to the draft, Vrabel lost a power struggle with Carthon over Levis, and ultimately part of the reason he's now not the head coach of the Tennessee Titans is that. Now, you've talked about the reporting that you and Diana Russini did in the aftermath of that. Question to ask, and I thought about this yesterday as we were talking about it, like, does it really matter anymore? And you heard Charles bring it up. Like, he's the guy now. Regardless of how he got here, he is the guy. Now, it does matter from the standpoint of, like, if this was Carthon's guy all along and Carthon was beating the drum for Will Levis and he ends up not being very good, well, ultimately, it's going to be Rand Carthon that has to answer for that. But do we care about the Carthon-Vrabel difference of opinion, allegedly, over Will Levis?
Yeah. Well, I think what there's maybe more care or more – this is goes back to all the times of who's got final say, right? Why do we ask that? Some of it is – when there's an amazing pick like Brock Purdy with the Niners is Mr. Irrelevant, right? It's like, man, whose idea was that? Let's give them credit, you know? And again, sometimes with that, it's like your scouting staff, whatever, but, or whatever, whoever, somebody was like, I just love that. I stood on the table for that guy. Like, we've talked about how Titans fans should always thank Blake Bedingfield because he stood on the table both telling John Robinson and Mike Mularkey, and he got Mularkey on his side eventually, we got to draft this kid, Derrick Henry. And they had just, you know, traded for DeMarco Murray, and he won. And that's stuff like that is, first of all, those are great stories, right? But also, if something goes bad, whose freaking fault is it, right? So that's why final say matters. And, you know, a lot of teams don't like to – that's why a lot of them are like, no, we all just make decisions together. But this whole thing does bring up, Robbie – you know, and it came up again yesterday, you know, and I talked with both of them, you know, if you go back to last year and Charles said it again yesterday, that's why it came up again. You know, the fact he was told by a source that it was, quote, ownership driven. The source believed It was ownership driven. Right. And TD said last year, and I talked to both of them yesterday, you know, he had sources tell him that's not true. And, you know, here, this is, I've got a rant coming on this too, okay? Not on that aspect of it, but just on the whole, this is the problem with anonymous sources. But I trust both of those guys completely. I mean, Charles had a good source or sources in the Titans building. We know this. Charles has sources all over the league. He's been an impeccable reporter for like decades. TD would never be sloppy. TD has great sources with the Titans, does a great job covering the Titans. And frankly, as someone who was a beat writer for a long time, I lean toward the local person who's always there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Covering a beat. Cause I've been there with on a beat when someone parachutes in nationally and it's like maybe they had something or maybe something's a little bit off, whatever. But like, it's not like the problem is someone was told something by somebody. Someone was told something by somebody else. The people aren't named, you know, there's no accountability publicly for them. And, I think we can say this about the Levis pick. One, I mean, Amy, they would never have made this pick without Amy's approval, right?
For sure.
I mean, it's not like there's no way they're doing this behind her back or whatever. Whether it was like she was standing at the table or just was like, oh, I like that idea. You know, I don't know that it matters too much. And I also don't think we will see at any point anyone saying this was Vrabel-driven. You know, I'm not saying that I think that Vrabel was like, no, hell no. And you know, maybe the call, I think TD made a point about the call, which is like, you know, Vrabel, it's not like Vrabel with other prospects, like, hey, buddy, I can't wait to see you. Yay. You know what I mean? It's kind of how Vrabel is with people. But I don't think anyone's going to report at any point that Vrabel was the, if you do see someone report that at some point, I mean, that to me is spin because it's like, can we just dump and blame everything on the guy who's gone, who right. Everybody wants to think is an idiot now. So I don't think it really matters that much. Bottom line is it might be a mistake. I know this is the week where we all look at it like, oh my God, what a mistake. you know, it was a second round pick, could have been a heck of a value pick, and we still don't know how it's going to turn out. But it comes up again this week, and I just think these things happen all the time, where different parts of different sources in a team, different parts of a team tell someone one thing, someone else tells them something different. It might just be that those people interpreted something different, or they're hearing what people said. Is there direct knowledge of what Amy said in any of this? Like, I don't know.
Ed on the text line says, if the Titans play well and win, what will you guys talk about next week on the program? I mean, it has been a lot of fodder this week.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of fodder.
Is this a suggestion that we really only like to talk when things are bad? Like, we only enjoy when things are bad?
Believe you me. I am dying to talk about some good-looking offensive football for the Tennessee Titans. It's been far too long since we've been able to talk about some good-looking offensive football for the Tennessee Titans on a consistent basis. I'm dying to get there. I hope we do at some point this year.
Look, I love, and this happens, it's happened here, like it happened in the 21. I love the week two complete reversal from what we thought from week one type thing, you know? Actually, it happened in 2019, too, the other way. The Titans looked like a freaking wagon at Cleveland, and then they came plummeting back to earth pretty quickly. Was week two at Jacksonville? No, I don't think so. It might have been like week three. That awful Jacksonville game. Remember where, like, Jameel Douglas, I think, at guard?
Oh. That was week three, yeah. That was a Thursday night, week three, where Marcus Mariota is probably still having bad dreams about Calais Campbell.
Right, exactly, Calais Campbell, yeah. So, no, I'm all the way here for –
week two was Indy that year. I believe week two was Indy that year, and that was the day that they set the freaking field on fire with the pyrotechnics, which could have been a sign of things to come for the offense the next few weeks.
And it was. It was a sign of things going for that game because they botched it. And, yeah, that's right. So, no, I am all the way here for Levis, 25 for 30, 270, two touchdowns, no picks, sliding all day. You know, I mean, believe me, that would be the most fun we could possibly have next week. But it might not happen.
It may not.
So whatever happens, we'll talk about it.
Absolutely. Jared from Spring Hill says, I can't wait for the perfect storm. Malik takes on Nashville. Can't wait to see what happens if the Titans lose and whose heads will roll. This is from Jared from Spring Hill. Got to get through the Jets game first. But the Malik Willis, Will Levis game could potentially be looming around the corner after that.
Dennis says, would you trade Levis for Purdy right now? Yeah. Yes.
Sure would.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Purdy's got a great situation, but watch Purdy play. He's pretty good, man. He's pretty good. He moves around really well, extends plays. Yeah. So,
I mean, he's pretty accurate with the ball. Now, I would agree with those. Like, does Purdy have the arm talent that Will Levis has? Probably not. Like, now he's got pretty good. I mean, he throws the ball well, but I don't think he's got the arm that Will Levis has. But consistently putting the football where the football needs to be placed, that's the name of the game, the NFL, baby. And I'll take that.
I know it's a bad time to bring up the thing I always bring up because he was bad last week, but Kirk Cousins does not have nearly the talent of Will Levis, or just list on and on and on. He gets the ball out fast and accurately, and he's made how much money in this league. And I understand he hasn't, you know, he's one playoff win and all that stuff, but there is nothing more important. So Brock Purdy, I think I'd put him in that realm with those guys. I put Tannehill in that realm. I put Goff in that realm. Give them good conditions. They'll deliver the ball. You'll take that. We don't know that Levis can do it at that level at all.
Jake from Greenbrier says, I'm here for the scenario where the Titans play Willis and Tannehill back-to-back weeks. Go Packers and Dolphins. Here's Malik Willis. Here's Ryan Tannehill because Tua's hurt. Bring him in.
It's truly insane, too. Like, seriously, think about that. Like, it's truly insane how we were talking about that for the week before, and yep, that's okay, that's out. Now it's the very next week it could happen again. I mean, I don't think it will. You know, I think Tua's probably gonna stick with it, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's got paid a ton of money, so my guess is he's probably gonna try to stick with it.
Yeah, but I don't know. At some point, maybe the Ryan Tannehill thing will emerge. Tannehill I mean, I think absolutely if the Jordan Love thing was the season, I think right now he would be up there with Matt LaFleur. People were incorrectly saying they were together here, by the way. They were not here together. They just missed each other. But he'd be up there right now repping. He'd be your guy. And frankly, at least for this weekend, you would have a better experience.
There's no doubt. Although I'm all in on QB1, Malik Willis. I've talked myself into it. They're winning.
I'm excited for the game, man. I will be streaming that one. I'm excited for it.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed, and you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5 The Game.
Okay. Did I say Rex Road right?
Rex Road.
Rex Road. Okay, let me do that again.
No worries.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed, and you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5 The Game.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. Joseph, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I've had a version of this rant before, which I've said before. I think I've had some rants that maybe I've done three times. So, but I probably told some version of the same story I'm about to tell too, but I think it's a good time to bring it back. And maybe this should be like an annual thing, like my high school football message that Karski crapped on. What about the Yankees and the outside? So here, let me just boil it down to you. I hate anonymous sources. I hate them. Okay. Do I use them? Yeah, I've used them plenty. Do I still hate them? Yes. If I could sign up right now in my career, the rest of my career, for never using anonymous sources again, even understanding how it would limit some reporting opportunities. I mean, as long as I can stay employed. Yeah. You know, and it's not like I use them a ton, but sometimes like again, last year, the whole stuff happened and I chipped in with Diana Russini, and that's all sourced, of course. I'm inspired to say this during a week. I'm reminded of, you know, like the Will Levis thing, right? Like I just said, you know, Charles Robinson said in our show, the source told him they believed the pick was, quote, owner-driven. TD said last year he had sources who disputed that. Again, I trust both of them completely. They're pros. They don't use shoddy sources. You know, but anonymous sources, there's not accountability for the source. With a reporter, sure, but things like this happen. And I'll go to a Michigan State coaching search from about 18 years ago. I was lied to and wrote off lies twice during the search. One about a candidate who was not a serious candidate, as expressed to me by a source, a very high level in that search. And one saying the search wasn't over when it in fact was. And I know this source knew it was. One of those people I basically never talked to again. But the other, that was not an option. So that involved all kinds of, there was a lot of back and forth after that. And frankly, right now, we would still disagree on how it all went down and who knew what when, you know, it's just, but that's how it goes sometimes. And I learned a lesson about just how careful you have to be. And you're in a very competitive situation, but it can really burn you. My paper then, the Lancet State Journal, actually went a few years with a no anonymous sources policy for its reporters. And that limited me, of course, but I still appreciate it. And what happened was there were still times when I got news that it just being more aggressive with just, why can't you put your name on this?
Right.
Whereas without the policy in place, it absolutely is just like, okay, we'll go source said. And then that's that. And so if you're a reader out there and it's you're taking all this in and you care about your team, your team's a league or whatever. I mean, how skeptical are you about source said? There's, how do you know what's reliable and what isn't? You need to know, of course, the reporter in question, right? But, you know, source, but there's still, I mean, anybody can be had, okay? And, or be a little bit lied to, or, I mean, it's just when there's no real accountability publicly for the source, this is putting, you know, the reporter in the vulnerable position. And just, you know, you just don't want, like, losing trust with readers is the number one thing you don't want to do. I mean, sources have to be used. I understand it. Of course they do. But they should be used to deliver news items. Like, they should not be used to be quoted and rip other people, right, and go off on people, which happens too much. And look, let me raise my hand. I'm now a hypocrite because David Ubbin and I did this high school recruiting confidential and talked to all these high school football coaches in the state of Tennessee. And one of them told me just absolutely laid into Jeremy Pruitt. And look, there, a lot of people felt that way, but it was still an example of an anonymous source being used to go off on someone as opposed to just using sources to deliver news. So again, I've been part of all this stuff. I just hate it. And I hate seeing young reporters try to say source this, source that. And then there's not even, it's not news. You know, it's just like heard this or blah, blah, blah after the fact. It just, I think there's just like a, like young reporters feel like, you know, that's just a thing that validates you. Yeah. Or like, you got to use sources. You got to be able to quote anonymous sources. And really it should be like, you use this when absolutely necessary and only when absolutely necessary. Sometimes it is, but if it's not, and there's not news to deliver, then try to avoid it. So I hate it. And I would imagine that a lot of people who digest, sports media do as well. And so we agree.
Well, we do. And just to add to that, it's kind of a double-edged sword to some degree, because I'm totally with you. Like when you have anonymous sources that are feeding you whatever, whether it's information on a football team or whatever, like you said, there's no public accountability for them. So like when you attach your name to something and you're lying, then you know that you've got to answer for that to the general public. When there's no accountability to it and you don't have your name to it, then it's much easier. I think there's probably much more lying that goes on that way. Now, having said that, there are some really good stories that have been done out there in all walks of life, but certainly in sports, where anonymous sources were crucial, right? Like you wouldn't have gotten information without the ability to have anonymous sources. So it kind of is a double-edged sword that way. And I do think too many, and this is, I think, especially prevalent in sports now, there are too many people like willing to take shots at other people with anonymous sources. Like we've talked about this before as it relates to the Titans, right? Like let's say, or even, you know, CJ Stroud with the S2 stuff. There were some anonymous sources on some of that stuff. And it's like, okay, well, who's saying this and what's the motive behind it, right? Like, is it a rival GM? Is it an opposing head coach? Like, what's the motive behind whatever the words are being said about this team, about this player? And from anonymous sources, I think you've always got to have that in the back of your mind of, all right, somebody clearly has an axe to grind here. Why? And what is it?
No, that's a great point. The Stroud thing is a great example of media being basically weaponized, right? And so technically, the information was not inaccurate, but there was a complete lack of context in terms of what happened, which we've since learned, which is that Stroud didn't want to take the test and ripped through it and just like, get me out of here. Like he hadn't eaten all day. And he was just like, and so it was like this terrible score. And then he took it again and he got a good score, right, which was also not part of the, so technically it was true, but it was delivered without all that stuff. And again, I don't know, maybe I don't know the timing of everything, like when he took the other one or when it was reported, but still, like, it turned into this whole thing that was, the problem was the initial report was at the very least extremely limited and lacking context. So yeah, that's a great example of it. So look, like I go back like to the Vrabel fired story, you know, that we did. I mean, look, there was a lot of commentary given by people about people that was not very pleasant.
Yeah.
And we didn't use any of that, you know. It's just like, what can we all agree that happened? And then here's the result. Like, was what we tried to do and get out all that commentary, you know? I mean, there was commentary on like how people felt at certain times, but there was some very insulting things that never made that. And that's good, you know? Like, I think stuff like that should not make that. But like I said, like, I've been a part of that too.
Alex on the YouTube chat says, Mike Keith threw me a tiny plastic football in 2001. Pretty sure that makes me an insider. If you guys need any good scoops. Thank you, Alex. I'll keep you in mind.
Good deal.
615-737-1025 our phone number. It's been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We'll be joined by Teron Davenport coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the matchup between the Titans and the New York Jets coming up on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.